following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this March 28th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. You could not have drawn up a more perfect day here in the Auburn-Opelika area. Sun is shining, it's warm outside, and the Tigers play today. That's right, the Sweet 16 rolls on. Bruce Pearl and the boys in Atlanta, they're taking on Michigan tonight in the Sweet 16. We're going to talk all about that today. Plus, we'll get a little baseball talk in there as well, as Auburn baseball taking on Georgia this weekend starting tonight. You can catch that radio broadcast with Brad Law right here on ESPN 106.7. More on that coming up later in the show. We'll also talk about what happened last night in the Sweet 16. Two good games, two not so good games. And we'll talk about what's coming up around the Sweet 16 in the other games tonight. And, of course, make our predictions for the Elite Eight as well. In the studio with me, he's going to be here for the first hour today, Christian Griffin. What's up, my man? Happy Friday to you, sir.
Happy Friday. Up in the 80s for the first time in what feels like forever. If that's the one complaint you have from today, I think it's a pretty dang good free-for-all Friday. Absolutely fantastic. Hopefully the sun and the sky and everything leads to a pretty solid night for the Auburn Tigers as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, just excited to have so much to talk about today. You'll be with me for the first hour. You will then be dipping out to go call some more Lee Scott baseball. Warriors got a win last night against Dadeville. They got two more coming up this afternoon.
Yeah, 16-7 victory. No, I'm sorry, a 17-6 victory over the Tigers in Game 1. Games 2 and 3 are tonight. First pitch scheduled for 4 p.m. on Tiger Country 104.5, tigercountry.net, the Radio Alabama app. So as soon as we're finished here and y'all are finished with 106.7, flip on over, Tiger Country 104.5. Hopefully with those doubleheaders, we can carry you right in to the Auburn game. And it should be a whole lot of fun. Again, it'll be a hot one. But again, if that's the one complaint, I think we're doing something right.
Yep, and so you'll be with me for an hour. And then Lance Dahl of Locked On Kentucky and the Barn, he's going to be joining me in hour number two. We'll get to talk to him a little in-depth about Kentucky and Tennessee tonight. We'll get his thoughts on Auburn and Michigan, of course, make our predictions as well. It is Free For All Friday, which means phone lines are open the entire show. We want to hear from you, your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports. You can give us a call, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. If you're at home, at the office, driving around, whatever the case may be, get in, be a part of the show. We want to hear from you. And you can always shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. Your picks and predictions for the games coming up tonight. Your thoughts on Auburn and Michigan. Are you nervous? Are you confident? Are you concerned? Do you think Auburn's got it in the bag? Let us know your thoughts on that. And of course, your thoughts on what happened last night, which is where we start the show today, as the Sweet 16 is halfway done as four teams punch their ticket to the Elite Eight. It was Florida who beat Maryland. It was Duke who beat Arizona. Alabama beat BYU. And Texas Tech beat Arkansas. It was the higher seeds that got the better of the lower seeds. There were technically no upsets last night in these four games. Which one stands out to you the most? We're going to talk about all of them and break them down here, but each game has its own storylines, and each one has its own way that it happened. Where do you want to start? I'll leave it up to you.
I feel like we just go in order. We start with what was by no means the most surprising outcome of the night, but Alabama outshoots their way against BYU. Alabama, if they did not shoot a free throw or a two-point field goal, would have beaten BYU. Or might have been just the two-point field goal. Not if you just had threes and the free throw line. Alabama goes 25 of 51 from the three-point line. Sets the record for the tournament. But I know you have some strong opinions about that game and that Alabama team.
Yeah, well, look, there's no doubt about it that Alabama shot the lights out of this thing. You said it, and that's what I had looked at last night. If Alabama did not make a two-point field goal, they still would have beaten BYU in this game last night. They break an NCAA tournament single-game three-point record. They make 25 threes, scoring 113 points and beating BYU 113-88. BYU did not play bad. Their defensive game plan was bad because our friend Carter Burner tweeted, and I saw this on social media, he said, BYU just looked shocked when Bama just started hucking up threes, and they were like, wait, why are they doing that? Why are they still shooting? He was right. They kind of looked surprised, and it's like, there's literally one scouting report. There is one thing on the report for this Alabama team. They shoot it really well, and they're going to shoot it a lot, even if they don't shoot it well. And they did, man. They couldn't figure it out. There were open shooters all over the place. They just didn't have I don't want to say the effort. They just didn't have the game plan to stop Alabama, to run them off the three-point line, to force them to take tough shots. I mean, Alabama came in and did what they wanted to do, and they score 113 points in a game, and you win by a lot, and you move on to the Elite Eight easily if you're the Crimson Tide.
It felt like it was the mindset of, we're going to play decent enough defense and hope that they miss their shots. And there are certain teams that you feel like you can go in, maybe not in March with that mentality, but certain games throughout the season of, you pick and choose your spots of, hey, we're going to let this guy shoot that open three just because of the percentages. There's not too many guys that play for the Alabama Crimson Tide that you can just wave your hand at and say, ah, I dare you to shoot it. Now try and make it. Because 25 of 51, BYU, I mean, if you tell them before the game they put up 88 points on the offensive end of the floor, shoot, you tell me that BYU puts up 88 points, I tell you that they have a pretty good shot at winning the basketball game. But then you go and look at all of these stats. I mean, they go 10 of 15 from two. They only shot 15 two-point field goals the entire game, and they made 10 of them, and shoot 49% from three, and that's a crazy number already. Then you look at the fact that they shot 51 of them while also going 18 of 21 from the free throw line. This is Alabama when every single thing clicks. You've seen the highs, you've seen the lows. This is the epitome, the exact definition of, you could not play any better if you're Alabama on the offensive end of the floor.
There it is.
And that's where that dot, dot, dot comes in. Because yes, you score 113 points and you still give up 88. And that's a crazy number to even think about giving up.
Which is why I firmly believe that this will not happen again for Alabama. This is the best offensive game that they will play for the rest of the tournament, whether that's one game, two games, or three games in the Elite Eight, Final Four, or a national championship game. Alabama will not play this good on the offensive end of the floor again. They are not going to score 113 points on Duke in the Elite Eight. They're not going to score 113 points against either Kentucky. Well, maybe they could against Kentucky, but against Tennessee in the Final Four. They're not going to score 113 points on a combination of Auburn, Michigan, Michigan State, Florida. That's not going to happen, okay? It's just not. They're not going to shoot 53% from the floor. They're not going to shoot 49% from the three-point line. They're not going to win the rebounding battle every time. And rebounding was the only thing that kept BYU even somewhat in this game before the Tide pulled away with about 15 minutes to play. They will not shoot like that again in the tournament. They may get close, but that's the best they can do. And I'm telling you, it's going to come back to get them on the defensive end. Because they took the mindset, as they always do with Nate Oates, to heck with playing defense, let's just see if we can outscore them. And it's the times that they can't. It's the times that their offense is not clicking. It's the time that they go cold. That's when they lose. When they take that mindset and it doesn't work, it's bad news bears for the Alabama Crimson Tide. It was good last night, and everything is fine, and Bama fans are riding high today. I'm just telling you, watch out and beware, because it's fool's gold, and we've seen it time and time again.
I think it goes back to the factor of why you feel like going into this game, BYU had a real chance at winning because they played such a similar style of offense, right? They love to get up and down the floor. They love to shoot the three. I feel like this is almost the recipe for every team that's still in the tournament of rather than trying to match Alabama, force them to match you. And it's something that doesn't happen very often because Alabama, again, has that mindset of we're going to play our style of basketball and you're going to adjust to it. And I think BYU didn't make any sort of adjustment and it just favored Alabama even more down the stretch. You look at games like or teams like Auburn and Tennessee that play a much slower style of offense, a much more physical brand of defense, and that's when you can see this Alabama team sometimes struggle. And I feel like that's the mentality that Duke's going to have to take in any team that matches up with the Crimson Tide and the rest of the tournament.
Well, you mentioned the teams that I was going to bring up. The teams that can do that the best in the country, not just in the SEC, I think Houston's in there, yes, right? I think Houston belongs in that category, and Alabama beat them 85-80. But just sticking with the SEC, and these teams are still alive, right? Auburn, Florida, and Tennessee. Do you know what Alabama's record was against those three schools this season, in the regular season? Not counting the SEC tournament, just in the regular season. Do you know what Alabama did against those teams down the stretch? And I guess we can use the SEC tournament for Florida, just to make my argument a little bit better, but
if you're including the tournament, what 2-4?
You beat Auburn.
Split with Auburn. You split with Tennessee, and you lost both to Florida, right? Or did you only play Tennessee once?
Only played Tennessee once. Okay, they lost both games to Florida. They lost the game to Tennessee, and they lost one of the two games against Auburn. They're 1-4 against those three teams that play that style of basketball, or at least have the ability to do what you just talked about, where you can get them off their game, you can slow it down, and make them adjust to you. Alabama's 1-4 against those three teams. They did beat Houston in the non-conference, so you can count 2-4, because I think Houston falls into that category too.
I agree.
But Alabama's 2-4 against the teams remaining in the tournament that play with that type of style, that have the ability to do that. And I think that's what's going to get them beat. Whether it's Duke, whether it's Houston in the Final Four or Auburn or Florida in the national championship game, Alabama cannot play like they did last night for three more games. It's impossible. It won't happen.
It's just simply put the law of averages, right? I mean, you can see those teams like Alabama get, you see the highs and the lows and they average out to this number or whatever. You feel like with every sort of roller coaster, when you hit that high, you're going to get that low, and if you're Alabama, you're hoping that it can stay at least somewhat where it was last night for three more games. But when you're running into these types of defenses, again, I don't think that it's plausible. I think they're going to have to fix some sort of mentality, and it may be the fact that they just totally switched it up against BYU and said, all right, I know we've had a little bit more emphasis on defense, but this game, we're going to go score as many points as we can and hope that it works, and then we'll go back to the mentality change. I just don't want it to be one of those situations where then all of a sudden you force them to play more defense than they like to do, and then you're not seeing the shots fall down from any of the point guards, and all of a sudden you're seeing them get blown out.
And I feel like for Bama, though, because they have put more emphasis on defense this year than they have in the past, but in a game like that where Mark Sears knocks down his first three or four shots in a row, he's got 12 points by the time they hit the under 16 timeout. At that point, I think that's when that mindset sets in of like, all right, let's go.
Here, yeah.
Throw the game plan out. Let's go. And just run.
Let BYU throw it at the rim as many times as they can. If they shoot 45%, we'll shoot 50 and we'll win the game.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what happened last night. And look, BYU did everything they could. They just couldn't keep up. It's what it comes down to. They could not keep up with Alabama, who put on one of the best offensive performances ever in an NCAA tournament game. I'm just telling you, it ain't going to happen again.
What is happening, though, is the SEC continues to be dominant, or at least in the early slate of games, Florida and Maryland. It was a close game at halftime, another one of those games that was close up until about the under 16 timeout in the second half, maybe a little bit closer, maybe the 14-minute mark in this contest. But, I mean, Will Richard, Walter Clayton, guys like that. You had Elijah Martin. Nobody stepped up and had that 30-point outing that a couple of these other teams did, or like Derek Queen did for Maryland. He was the only reason they were even in this basketball game in the first half and into the second half. But when you have Chinyelu, you have Richard, you have Walter Clayton, and you have Elijah Martin that all get the start and go in for double figures, you also bring Howe off the bench, and he goes for double figures. That's why there's so many guys on this Florida team. That's why so many people have picked them to win that national championship, just because you have Walter Clayton. You have one of the best point guards. And what I said on the road to Dadeville yesterday is what could be playing right now is the best player in the tournament. Had a little bit of an off game, went 3-for-9, 2-for-6 from the floor, did go 5-of-6 from the free throw line, but had a quiet 13 points, and Florida still dominates the Terrapins 87-71.
Florida's bench outscored Maryland's bench, and this is what we talked about was the depth factor. Maryland's starting five is really, really good. Starting four is really, really good. Their bench is non-existent. Florida, last night, off the bench, had 29 points. You know how many Maryland had? Three.
Hoo-hoo.
29-3 was the bench differential last night between the Gators and the Terrapins. Florida had six guys go in double digits. Maryland had four. That includes Derek Queen, who had 27. Gillespie had 17. A couple of guys had 12. But that's the difference. Florida has eight or nine guys. Maryland has four or five. And it showed last night. Because this was a two-point game at the half. Maryland was hanging around, and then Florida did what they do. They knock down shots, they get stops, and they strain them together. And they pulled away. They can score nearly 90 points, and they can hold you in the 70s. That's what makes this Florida team so good every time they step on the floor.
Both games were the ones that we picked that could be that blowout game. You picked Alabama. I didn't want to go that route because, again, I have BYU in the bracket making it. They obviously get knocked off. Florida was the one that I said, just that kind of pull-away game, and they could cover it, man. One stat that I looked at, you're looking at bench points. I'm looking at the rebounding category.
Oh, domination.
Maryland had seven offensive rebounds. I believe they had two in the second half. They had 20 rebounds total. Not in the first half, not in the second half. 20 rebounds total.
Compared to
Florida, who had 15 offensive rebounds and 27 defensive rebounds. Florida out-rebounded Maryland 42-20 in the Sweet 16. That is one of those stats I come in here and talk about today. Before, you didn't even have to know the score. I sit down in front of this microphone and go, all right, Florida out-rebounded Maryland by 22. Next.
And you say Florida wins by double digits, and you move on. And they do. They win by 16.
The only thing you need to know.
Yep. They win by 16. Alabama wins by a million. But the other two games were really, really good coming down the stretch. Duke and Arizona and Arkansas and Texas Tech. We're talking about those when we come back, as we're just underway here on the Friday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
We continue on here on the Friday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. It's free for all Friday, man. We're having a good time talking about the first set of Sweet 16 games. I wanted to say first round of Sweet 16, but that didn't sound right. So the first set of Sweet 16 games that took place last night kind of broke down the not as close games, the quote-unquote blowouts is what we called them yesterday. Florida over Maryland and Alabama over BYU. Let's quickly jump into Duke and Arizona as the Blue Devils drop triple digits as well. 100-93, Duke takes down Arizona. The Cats had every chance, man. The Cats had every single chance to try and get a couple of stops, get some buckets, and take the lead and put this thing away. But Duke showed why they're a good team. They showed why they are more than Cooper Flagg, who had a really good game last night. He had 36-7. What did I say on the show yesterday? I said Cooper Flagg needs to have a good game and be a true difference maker. I think I threw out something like 25-6-7 or something like that. And that's exactly what he did. He showed, with non-biasy here on the radio in Auburn, he showed why he's one of the best players in college basketball. Yeah. Plain and simple.
I don't think that that's, I mean, I don't think that's a biased statement whatsoever. Caleb Love, crazy as it sounds, I think outdueled Cooper Flagg. But that goes right into your point of it shows why they're more than just Cooper Flagg. When you have Knipple go for 20, you have Sion James go 16 points on 3 of 4 from behind the arc. Duke shoots 60% from the floor. They go 11 of 19 from 3 and shoot 27 free throws. 37 wouldn't have surprised me either.
No.
But 27 free throws, shoot 85%. If Arizona had anybody that they could rely on other than Caleb Love and then last night a little bit of Jaden Bradley, you feel like they had a pretty solid chance. But they just didn't. You had to go to Caleb Love every single time, and for about 10 or 15 minutes from a spanning from the 5-minute mark in the first half to about the 10-minute mark in the second half, he didn't miss.
Yeah.
But then as soon as he did, like what you were talking about, Arizona just couldn't get that stop, score, stop, and all of a sudden have their chance or a score, stop, score, one of the two, to be able to cut this game into what felt like it was anywhere from 8 to 15 under the 10-minute mark in the second half.
Yeah, and Arizona dealt with some foul trouble too. Lewis fouled out, Awaka had 4 fouls, so he only played 13 minutes. He's one of their bigger guys that Arizona tries to go to. And so, look, man, Caleb Love's a great player, and he just played his final game of college ball and you know, after his 18th year of playing, and he did everything he could to keep Arizona around in this game. But I'm going to be honest, man, this is the best that Duke has looked in quite some time on the offensive end. Their defense was a little suspect, but you start looking ahead, which we'll get to in the second hour more, of Duke and Alabama in the Elite Eight. I haven't seen the opening over-under. I saw the opening spread. I haven't seen the opening over-under for Duke and Alabama.
I think it was 174 when it opened. I don't know if it's updated since.
I mean, you would like to think that could easily go over. We said the Alabama-BYU total was crazy at 175, and it hit by more than double digits.
It dropped a point. 173.5 is the opening line. Duke minus 7.5.
And it's crazy to say that it's because of Duke's defense and not Alabama's defense. You trust Duke. I trust Duke to stop Alabama more than I trust Alabama to stop Duke.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that's kind of where I stand on that. But I say all of that. Duke looked really good last night. Duke looked like a national title contender last night. And I think a lot of Auburn fans needed to see that. I think a lot of SEC fans needed to see that because there was a lot of hate and doubt. I'm not defending Duke. I'm not pulling for them. I'm just saying they looked really good last night. And the same thing we were saying for Alabama could be said about Duke. Ain't no way they play that good again. I'm starting to think a little bit differently because Duke doesn't just light it up from deep every single game. They have dudes who can score from anywhere on the floor.
And multiple guys. And this is going to be a very interesting game because both teams use the free throw line very much to their advantage. And so you feel like towards the end of the stretch, this Duke-Alabama game could be a 3.5-hour game. If it's under 8 and it's a 2-possession game on either side, both of these teams, not in a bad way, but just they use the free throw line to their advantage and use that on their offensive end because they're so proficient on the offensive end. It will be a fantastic game coming up on Saturday.
So Duke moves on. They'll play Alabama in the Elite Eight. But there's one more game that we need to talk about that happened last night. It was the nightcap. If you stayed up until midnight to see it, it was worth it. Because fans got the exciting finish that they've been looking for in the NCAA tournament as Texas Tech takes down Arkansas 85-83 in overtime. John Calipari, he did it again in the most John Calipari way possible. We'll talk about that when we come back, plus start to dive into Auburn and Michigan. Stick around, we're 30 minutes in to hour number one here on Free For All Friday.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Free-for-All Friday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goetz. He is Christian Griffin. Phone lines are open all show today. That's how Free-for-All Friday works, man. We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. You can shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. One more game from last night to talk about before we hop into Auburn and Michigan. And I said it going to break that fans have been asking and begging and basically complaining that the NCAA tournament hasn't had enough drama, right? Hasn't had enough game winners and buzzer beaters and down-to-the-wire games. And as I said, if you stayed up late last night, you got what you were looking for with Texas Tech and Arkansas goes to overtime, and the Red Raiders are still dancing 85-83. The Hogs blow it in the most John Calipari way possible.
We talked about it yesterday on the show that if there was one game that was going to be the most exciting, it would be this one, and for the reason of nobody's talking about it.
Nobody was talking
Nobody
about it.
Nobody seemed to have given anything about this game.
We did.
Other than the fact of, I mean, I guess it's on, so I'll watch a little bit while the Duke-Arizona game's on. And then all of a sudden you saw that Arkansas jumped out to a huge lead. You were about ready to turn it off. And then here come the Red Raiders. And here come their mentality change that they had with some of these crazy statistics that we're about to read out for you.
Some of the comparisons in this game are mind-boggling. And the one that I have to highlight, I've been waiting to do this all day. Arkansas goes 27 of 65 from the floor, okay? That's 41.5%. That's pretty good for a team. Not bad. Not bad. They go 10 of 25 from deep. That's 40%. You'll take that in an NCAA tournament game all night long, right? 19 of 22 from the free throw line. That's great for Arkansas, 86%. Texas Tech.
Percentage-wise.
Percentage-wise, it was fine. They weren't great from three, 25%, 8 of 32. Free throw differential is kind of crazy here. Arkansas doubled them up, 22 attempts compared to the Texas Tech 11. But it's the field goal number that I want to look at here. Remember I said Arkansas shot 65 shots last night. They hucked it up 65 times. Texas Tech shot it 83 times in this game. In 45 minutes because of the extra overtime period. So that does play a little bit of a factor. But 65 shots for Arkansas and 83 shots for Texas Tech. It's incredible. And you look at that and you say, well, yeah, no wonder they won. They threw it up there so many times, they were bound to fall at some point. And that's exactly what happened because that's where you jump in.
Because rather than the turnovers, which is the first stat that I was looking at, I thought you were building radio intensity.
I was handing it off to you.
That was a bad transition alley-oop.
We call that teeing it up, and then you get to swing.
That was the alley-oop that hit off the side of the backboard, and now the other team's taking it in transition the other way.
Yeah.
The first stat that I was looking at was, or the first question I had was, okay, how many times did Arkansas turn the ball over? Because that's immediately your thought of, how did this team shoot so many more times? No, Arkansas only had 10. But it goes back to the rebounding category. And if you haven't noticed that, that's an emphasis that we've had on every single game when you're seeing an outcome like this. The mentality change for Texas Tech in the second half. The Red Raiders finished with 22 offensive rebounds, had 51 rebounds in the contest compared to only 39, which I say only is still a relatively decent number for Arkansas, especially when you're playing 45 minutes and not 40. But 22 offensive rebounds for the Red Raiders. You have three starters for the Red Raiders going double figure, going 20 points, not just double figures. Hit 20 points. JT Toppin, who took over down the stretch and in overtime, went 10 of 18 from the floor, was a rebound away from a double-double. Darion Williams, who hit the three to send it to overtime, essentially had 20 points and 9 rebounds as well. And Christian Anderson shot 50% from the floor, 22 points, and had 4 rebounds, 3 assists as well. Is it crazy to say that just as much as Texas Tech won this game. Not even Arkansas, but I'm going to put it on one person, that John Calipari did just as much to lose it.
Yeah, he absolutely did. I mean, between the end of regulation, where they called a timeout, talked about it for 5 minutes because they took a TV commercial, came back and had nothing drawn up. I mean, just
said, get downhill and shoot that little LeBron floater to try and squeeze it off the backboard. And Calipari yelled at the officials complaining for a foul.
And then you go to overtime after you blew what was a 16-point lead. Largest lead for Arkansas was 16 in this game. And in full control, they held Texas Tech to 31 points in the first half. You're up by 7. You're rolling in the second half if you're Arkansas. You blow that lead, draw up whatever the heck that was at the end of regulation. You go to overtime, and I'll be honest, we were sitting there watching it, and I'm like, I don't know who's going to win. You felt like it was Texas Tech because of the momentum factor and things like that. Texas Tech hits a shot with, what, about 7 seconds or so, give or take? Arkansas's got the length of the floor to go, but they have this thing in their back pocket. And good thing is, they're flying home with it from California. They had a timeout, and they said, nah, we're good. Go ahead, just figure it out. And they didn't. They ran down the floor, dribbled it around, and took a contested long shot. And it, I'm not going to say it almost went in. It looked halfway decent, but it was a step back contested jumper at the buzzer. Kisses off the front left of the rim. Arkansas is devastated, and Texas Tech keeps dancing. Like, what are you doing? If you're John Calipari, I understand the idea of trusting your players, letting them make a decision, and trying to go win the game. Got it. But I know where you're about to go, and I'm going to let you do it. There was a moment in that 7 second period, yes, where this all could have been stopped, and Arkansas had a chance to draw up a play.
Yeah, I'm not a stand-up, jump-off-the-couch screamer, especially for games that I don't necessarily care about the total outcome. But I understand, from some sort of aspect of letting your player that you trust go and make a shot and try and win the game. You cross half court with, what, 4.5 seconds left? Then you do a little in-and-out dribble. You lose it for a second. Bam. Right in front of Coach Cal, that's where the timeout needs to be called. If your guy is still getting downhill and he's going towards the rim and can put it up with 2 seconds to where it either goes in or you have the opportunity of a tip-in offensive rebound, sure, I'd live with that result. But as soon as the momentum stops of the point guard, Calipari is 3 feet away from him because they're going to the same side and he's on the right wing. Calipari is standing right there and says, ooh, the in and out dribble didn't work. All right, another two dribble size up. Okay, here we go. Step back. Oh man, that 22-foot step back, 1 foot on the line, contested jumper at the buzzer. That's what we're going to settle for in my first year, is to try and go to the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
If you're able to get a layup, again, or get downhill and try and create contact, try and draw a foul, or put something up and get an offensive rebound, or even a drive-in kick for an open three in the corner, and you miss it, sure, I understand it. It's a shot that was a good shot that didn't go down. But instead, you'd have 3 seconds with a timeout right in front of your court or right in front of your bench, where you could have at least two dribbles, you could set an on-ball screen, you could set an off-ball screen, you could get something going downhill or something drawn up. After regulation, maybe he didn't have anything drawn up. Maybe that was what he had all of his marbles on. But my goodness, the end of regulation and the end of overtime, you had two great chances to still be celebrating with your team, and now the Red Raiders move on.
There's no other way to say it. Arkansas blew it. I mean, they blew it. They absolutely did. And look, I think Texas Tech is good. I don't think they're great. My early thoughts before we start talking Auburn and Michigan, my early thoughts is Florida is going to dismantle that Texas Tech team. I think Florida wins by double digits in that game against Texas Tech. I think Arkansas wouldn't have had the dudes to go against Florida, but Arkansas showed how good they could be. And heard some comments from John Calipari after the game where he said, despite the disappointing result, this was cool to hear, I'll admit. He said, despite the disappointing result, this was the most rewarding year I've ever had in coaching. He said it was the most rewarding season he's ever had as a head coach. And think about it. They started, what, 0-5 in SEC play? He took a team from Lexington, where he was basically ran out of, went to Fayetteville, and took a team to the Sweet 16 and had every chance to get them to the Elite Eight. It's pretty incredible. Pretty incredible for him to do that. So, I'm not a Calipari fan, but you blew it. And sorry. I mean, Texas Tech moves on. They're going to play Florida in the Elite Eight. I'll just give you my early thoughts. I think Florida absolutely waxes them. But those are the games that happened last night. We've got four more games coming on tonight. And I know you're only with us for the next few minutes, Christian. You got to leave at 3 o'clock. So I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take an early break. That way we're going to come back, have plenty of time to dive into Auburn and Michigan and allow you to get your full thoughts out there, your picks and predictions, because in hour number two, Lance Dahl is going to join me. Him and I'll talk some more about that game. The game's coming up tonight. We'll make all of our predictions in hour number two. So taking an early break, we'll come back and start talking Auburn and Michigan here on ESPN 106.7.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Winding down here, or wrapping up hour number one. Winding down, wrapping up, whatever. It's fine. Free-for-all Friday. Man, we do what we want to do. We say what we want to say, and
we're winding down hour number one.
We hold nothing back or something. I don't know. I just work here. So we took an early break because Christian Griffin is going to be leaving us in about 12 minutes or so.
Do you have that boo hotkey ready for me?
I can just do it manually. Okay. Boo! I want my money back. I
thought you were going to cheer.
Oh. Somebody probably did driving around. They're like, yes, you know, they just, somebody clapped, somebody just wrecked their car. So, no, we took an early break because you do have to leave us early. You got, at least got baseball coming up this afternoon, but wanted to give you a chance. You've got about 6-7 minutes to get your full thoughts on Auburn and Michigan as we begin to jump into this game tonight. More on this coming up in hour two, breakdowns of the other three games. We've got our buddy Lance Dahl coming in of Locked On Kentucky in the barn. He's going to join us for the second hour. But your thoughts. It's game day. Auburn and Michigan today in the Sweet 16. Let me rephrase. Auburn and Michigan tonight in the Sweet 16.
Maybe even tomorrow morning.
Could be. Yeah, could be. I mean, let's just be honest. This game is scheduled for 8:39. It will be close to 9 o'clock before this thing gets started. I just think that's how this has gone. Even if Ole Miss and Michigan State is not close, it will still be delayed. That's just how it goes. So
what was it? It was like a 9:09 start for the 8:39 game last night with
Arkansas and Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And then what was crazy is
that one finished.
Well, remember they were almost identical. We had them side by side. The Duke, Arizona, and Arkansas, Texas Tech were like the same time. Both
it was like
47
seconds left, and you're sitting there trying to move your eyes back and forth to watch one. There was finally like a timeout or the ball was out of bounds and everybody shifted their focus over to the left side of the screen.
Yep.
It's going to be an absolutely a fantastic battle. I mean, you see all of the storylines and the history. We saw the video that Auburn basketball posted of BP talking with KT Harrell earlier this afternoon, and he still looks like he's the same exact person of when he was still at Auburn.
Yeah.
If Jahni Broome and Dylan Cardwell and Chaney Johnson, if they could just completely wash what Vlad Golden and Danny Wolf are able to do, and all of a sudden you look at it at the end of the game and those numbers look very comparable on both sides of the stat sheet, I think Auburn is comfortable. I think Auburn does enough because I think that their guard play and the depth of the guard play is good enough to win the basketball game. But if one of those guys has a great night, and then Trey has a solid night, and then you have one of their players that is one of their specific key role players that might average 7.5, 8 a game. If all of a sudden he's the difference maker, and tell me if you've heard this, but has a career night against Auburn and has 18 and has 12 in the first half, and those points just come out of absolutely nowhere, then I think it makes it a lot more interesting. One thing that Auburn is really, really good at doing, and we've talked about it all year long, is forcing teams that play a style of basketball that are, it's high assist numbers, and Michigan is one of those teams. to play one-on-one basketball. And it's me versus you, and the four other people are out there guarding the four others. And if you pass the ball, they're not going to have a great shot. They're not going to blow by you. They're not going to be able to get an easy running layup or an open three or anything like that. You force so many different guys to be playmakers with the ball in their hands. If Auburn's able to do that, then I think the guard play is good enough to win. We talked with Brad Law yesterday, and he said that guard play runs March. And we've seen it time and time again. Yeah. You don't necessarily think about the Alabama State game, but against Creighton, by no means am I saying that Jahni Broome was the decoy in the game, but the fact that he didn't even give you double figures in the scoring column, but still gave you 8 and 13.
Yeah, he's terrible.
How many teams in college basketball? How many teams in college basketball would give their left arm for a center to give them 8 and 13 a game? Just about every single one of them. You do good enough on Kalkbrenner, and then you allow the guards to take over defensively, and then that turns into offense, where you have all three guards, and if Chad Baker Mazzara doesn't get injured and he plays more than, 22, 24 minutes, if he actually gives you the 30 minutes that he usually gets, probably scores 32. Guard play is so crucial, and if Miles Kelly can get going, which is kind of that X factor of if he can get going and knock down shots, you obviously expect him to, but he's shown you that he can either go 7 for 10 or 1 for 8. If he can give you 4 made threes in a game, which not that that's the expectation, but that's kind of like that cherry on top of the sundae, and then you allow Tahad Pettiford to still do what he's been doing in the tournament. You allow Denver to play lockdown defense. One thing that I'm worried about with this Michigan team, and we've obviously talked about the two big men with Vlad Goldin and Danny Wolf. One thing that Michigan and Dusty May have done really, really well is allowing Trey to sit at the top of the key, and they run a pick and roll, a two-man ball screen, with Danny Wolf being the ball handler. And at 6'11", there's not too many teams that can guard that. I'm interested to see on what the scout has been, on what these teams and what Auburn has been able to do against teams that have had success against Michigan. I think Chaney Johnson's defense against Danny Wolf could be the lone difference in this game. If Chaney Johnson forces Danny Wolf to be a perimeter player and can play without fouling, and you can allow Jahni Broome and Dylan Cardwell, which I think you might see all three on the floor tonight at the exact same time. If something like that happens and Chaney Johnson can play good enough defense without fouling, I think Auburn can feel comfortable in this game.
Well, something you said earlier that, again, we're going to highlight coming up in hour number two when Lance Dahl steps in here, but you have to limit the what's the term I want to use here? The guy on Michigan to not have the career game. The
role player.
Sure, the role player to go off. It was Roddy Gale against Texas A&M. I highlighted this when we talked about this game. He had 26 off the bench for Michigan in that game, on top of Danny Wolf with 14, Golden with 23. Trey Donaldson had a quiet night. He had 8 points and 4 assists. But you get Roddy Gale, who had 26 on 4 of 6 shooting from downtown, 8 of 8 from the free throw line. You can't have that happen. Auburn has proven they can't overcome that. But that's what Auburn does against other teams, except it's not a fluke when it happens. It's not a fluke when Tahad Pettiford goes off for 15 or 20 points. It's not a fluke when Chaney Johnson scores 8 to 12 points. That's what's going to win Auburn a national championship. And if those things don't happen, Auburn's in trouble. And if Auburn can't prevent that from happening with Michigan or whoever they play in the next round, they're in big trouble too.
Great radio. Michigan State wins. Tennessee wins. Auburn wins. Houston wins. All favorites.
Boo!
On my side of things. So that would mean the 8 favorites would make their way to the Elite Eight. The tier list, it's higher than ever, and it's more separated than ever. But for the fun of it, let's go Rebels.
Wow, you want Ole Miss then, huh? Your answer, you want Ole Miss in the Elite Eight.
Give me matchup number 4. Zero gimmicks, zero question marks about what both teams are going to throw at you. Jahni Broome a 30-piece, if that were to be the case.
Dang, okay. Well, hey, you got to get out of here. Go call some baseball. Plug it one more time. Tell the people where they can find it.
Yeah, Lee Scott and Dadeville, First Pitch Coming up here in just a little bit, 4 o'clock first start. I'll be on air 3:45 or 3:50. Tigers coming to Judd Scott Field. Warriors looking to get the sweep and start 6-0 in area play. Tiger Country 104.5, tigercountry.net, and the Radio Alabama app.
There you go. Tune in, 4 o'clock, Tiger Country 104.5. Stick around. Lance Dahl joins us in the studio for hour number two.
Whoa, Eagle!
Stick around. Second hour coming up.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. And as we get underway here in hour number two, if you missed any of the first hour, you'll be able to catch up with that on the podcast version of the show. We take the audio, put it on our station website for you at ESPNAU.com. Christian Griffin and I broke down all the games from last night from the Sweet 16, got his thoughts on Auburn and Michigan tonight as he is now out of the studio heading over to call some Lee Scott baseball. First pitch at 4 o'clock between Lee Scott and Dadeville for a doubleheader, so you can tune into that later on Tiger Country 104.5. So all of that was in the first hour. Again, you could check it out, ESPNAU.com, later on today. And here in hour number two, we're going to talk the games coming up tonight in the Sweet 16, including Auburn and Michigan. Excited for all of that and more here in hour number two. And joining us in the studio, as I said before we went to break, Lance Dahl from Locked On Kentucky and the Barn. What's up, my man? You've been a busy traveling man, right? I can't believe we caught you back in town. It's unbelievable.
Man, this has been a pretty fun week, honestly, going all over the place. And then obviously what's been happening with Kentucky, with them advancing to the Sweet 16. Got a big-time game tonight here in just a few hours. So, yeah, it's been a blast, dude. I have been all over the place, and it has been nothing short of incredible.
Well, we're going to talk all things basketball here in hour number two. If you'd like to be a part of the show, give us a call, 334-321-1390. Your picks, predictions, your confidence level, maybe your worry level for Auburn tonight against the Wolverines. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. Or you could shoot us a text with your score predictions in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And before we get into content, want to remind you that hour number two each and every day here during On the Line is brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. Before we talk about the games tonight, Lance, just want to get your quick thoughts before we officially move on. Overall ratings for the games last night and kind of takeaways from what happened in the Sweet 16. Couple of blowouts, couple of good games down the stretch. Calipari blows it again in the Sweet 16. Your thoughts on the games last night quickly.
Well, I think I might have touched on this when I was here last week, and if I didn't, I want to kind of break this down briefly, just about how there's been a conversation online about, you know, there's been blowouts, there's been higher seeds advancing, there's not been a ton of upsets, and tonight I think was the perfect example of that. And there's been a lot of complaint about how we're not seeing kind of the action that has made this tournament special in the past, which I think is absolutely fair from a consumer standpoint. But also, if you're a college basketball fan, you cannot tell me watching Duke and Arizona go at it, win by 7, Texas Tech and Arkansas, that game go down to the wire in overtime. You cannot tell me watching Alabama set an NCAA tournament record for threes made was not entertaining. While BYU also, it's not like they laid over and gave up. They were shooting like crazy the entire game. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a great slate, honestly, despite some of the games just kind of being either out of hand or like you could tell who the the better team clearly was, minus the Texas Tech-Arkansas game. I loved it. I really enjoyed the different games last night.
And I think we are going to get something similar tonight, possibly even better tonight.
Yeah.
With the four matchups that we have. We're going to talk Auburn-Michigan coming up in just a little bit. Ole Miss-Michigan State, Kentucky and Tennessee, which you're going to be able to give us some great insight on, and then Purdue and Houston. And I think we will start with Purdue-Houston because it's the one on the other side of the bracket. It's the one that has the least implications on Auburn for now because it's bottom right. The winner of this game, of course, moves on to the Elite Eight, and of course you've got Duke and Alabama in the other one. But Purdue and Houston, a matchup where Houston favored by 8.5. The total is a disgusting 133.5. This game being played in Indianapolis, so in Purdue's backyard. Your thoughts on Purdue and Houston? It's either going to be a defensive slugfest or both teams are just going to say to heck with it and shoot the lights out of this thing.
I think the most interesting to me is where this is being played, because I think a lot of people are going to look at this and say, hey, Purdue's going to have, you know, home court advantage here, which I think they might to an extent. But actually, over the weekend, funny story, I was sitting there talking with Gordon Hayward.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let's just throw that out there. Put that on the table.
We were just sitting there, and he was like, we were talking about playing in Indianapolis because Kentucky's going to be playing there. He's like, actually, believe it or not, it's not a home advantage. Obviously, it is because the fans are going to be there, but he was like, I played there during my tournament run, and Butler was there, and obviously, I'm from Indianapolis. It was like a huge thing for me pregame. And then you get in there, it's like a cavern. Mm-hmm. And like the noise just sort of like drowns itself out in a way. And the atmosphere is just so weird. If anything, it makes you more uncomfortable. The fans are almost a non-factor. And so it really just comes down to you playing in an atmosphere that's kind of like playing at a park. He said he hated it as a shooter, could not stand it.
Because it's a stadium and not an arena.
Exactly. And that's something that actually some players have been asked about and have talked about here in interviews leading up to these games with Houston, Purdue, Kentucky, Tennessee, is that, this is definitely a change of scenery. And you've seen some guys in practice struggle shooting the ball, whereas they would normally be fine. So in this game, with the way that Houston plays defense, with the way that Purdue is probably going to want to slow this game down in terms of pace, I think this will be a lower scoring game, maybe a little bit of a slugfest.
I do too. I don't know. I'm still not sold on Purdue. I'm just not. I'm not convinced that they are Elite Eight, Final Four, National Championship good. And look, Purdue beat High Point in the first round, and it wasn't a pretty win. They won by 12, but nobody watched it. Nobody kept up with it. And
I then watched it, Jacob.
I'm proud of you. I did. I guess the general public probably didn't keep up with that one as much. And then they beat McNeese after McNeese beat Clemson and almost blew it in that game. So has Purdue been tested enough taking on High Point and McNeese and now going up against probably the best defensive team in college basketball?
Well, I think the answer to that is, have they been tested recently? No. And if you want to take this all the way back into the regular season, when they had been tested late in the season, they failed. I mean, look at it. At the end of the season, they had four straight quad one losses. They beat UCLA at home, and then they beat Rutgers and lost to Illinois, and then split in the Big Ten tournament. It's not like they've been playing great against great competition, per se, and Houston's the best opponent that they've faced this season, according to KenPom. And the last time they faced an opponent this good, Auburn, who is fourth in the nation, KenPom third is Houston. We saw, we all know how that game went. So I like certain pieces on this Purdue team. I like Trey Kaufman-Wren.
Sure.
Obviously, I like Bryn Smith, who apparently Kentucky fans think they're going to get in the transfer portal once all is said and done. They've been saying that for months.
Did I say Kentucky's already picked up somebody in the transfer portal?
That's right. Picked up somebody earlier today. Cam Williams out of Tulane. He's a guy, I'm going to have to do a little bit more research on him. He was on the board, obviously, but he was like a 6'8 wing that can, it was like 40%+ from three, and he's a freshman. So he's somebody that's going to be probably a depth piece for the future, which I love. But anyway, Purdue, Fletcher Lawyer is somebody that you like as well. There are different players on this Purdue team that I can talk myself into as individuals, but with Matt Painter, with knowing Purdue's history in the tournament, the fact that they've even gotten this far without getting upset is kind of surprising. And this Houston team, they don't play around. There is one thing that they will do, and it is choke the life out of you. And I think they're going to try and do it against Purdue, and I think they've got the atmosphere and the stage to do it.
I trust Houston's offense more than I do Purdue's, because Houston's defense is going to be legit. Again, it's one of the best, if not the best, in college basketball.
Yeah.
I just trust their guys to make plays and score a little bit better. LJ Cryer versus Braden Smith is going to be awesome tonight. Cryer's a little streaky, but I feel that this is his stage. This is where he shines the most as a almost 16 points per game scorer. And then if you start getting somebody like Uzun, who scores over 11 points a game, you've got Emmanuel Sharp, who scores 12 and a half. Like, they have dudes who can knock down shots. And this is a good shooting team. Houston, yes, shoots it at 40% from behind the as a team, Lance. Yep. That's incredible.
That actually leads the nation, according to KenPom.
Really?
As a team, wow, they lead the nation in three-point percentage, which shocked me when I saw it a few days ago that they're that good at knocking down shots from behind the arc. Because when you think about this Houston team, or at least when I think about them, obviously the offense has been great, but it's the defense that you kind of latch onto and say that they like to slow things down, be methodical, and just kind of choke you out on defense. No, they will hurt you on the offensive end as well. The fact that they don't play with a ton of pace, I think, makes some lower scoring contests. Mm-hmm. But if they wanted to jack this tempo up, they've got the athleticism to do it. They've got the shot makers to do it. And they absolutely can hurt you.
And it's not a thing with Houston where, oh, they shoot at 40%, but they probably don't shoot a whole lot of threes. No, they shoot 19 per game.
Yeah.
They have 19 attempts per game from behind the arc, and they just make a lot of them. So I'm taking Houston. That's going to be my pick. I'm going to pick Houston to win this game. Do I trust them to win by 8.5? Seems like a lot in the Sweet 16 for these two styles of teams. So I'll take Houston to win, but I'll take Purdue to stay around in this matchup.
You know, the thing heading into the NCAA tournament, I was talking with somebody. They were asking me, like, out of the one seeds and out of, like, everybody in the tournament, obviously, it's a very chalk top-heavy tournament. It feels like, oh, maybe I shouldn't say that. It's just a very solid field overall. It's one of the best we've seen in a while. Kind of like my thoughts heading into it, I'm like, you know, there have been seasons in the past, especially as of late, where it's like you look at like the different top dogs and you see like this flashy team that's usually not there. You see a team that's kind of coming in hot and they're going to have a lot of momentum and they're a top seed or something like that. And then you've got like a one or a two seed that's like just plays a boring brand of basketball. Either that or they've just kind of methodically dismantled every single team in the field. And you don't really talk about them as much relative to the Dukes or the Auburns or the Floridas of the world. I'm like, Houston, Before I did my brackets and everything, frankly, this was before Florida just demolished everybody in the SEC tournament, I was like, Houston right now would be my national title favorite, just because of the fact that they have just kind of gotten it done without, for me at least, anybody really taking notice relative to some of the other big-time teams in the field. So I would take Houston to win this game. And frankly, if they don't make it to the Final Four or further, I would be surprised. This is a very, very, very good, experienced Cougars team.
Well, that is Christian's national championship pick is Houston.
There you go.
And so you guys are on the same line there. Let's move on to the game that will kick things off tonight, or tip things off tonight. 6:09 on CBS. It's the Rebels of Ole Miss as a 6 seed with Final Four coach Chris Beard against the 2 seed Spartans of Michigan State with the national championship winning coach Tom Izzo all the way back in the year 2000. It's the Spartans and the Rebels, Lance. Michigan State only favored by 3.5. Does Vegas know something that we don't know?
Well, I think that they know that Ole Miss is playing really good basketball right now. Over these past two games, they're coming in hot. I did a video recently on YouTube, just like a personal side project, like a video essay kind of breaking down what it takes to win in March.
And which was awesome, by the way.
Thank you. I went over like 5 different qualities of like what defines a national champion. It's about experience. It's about having star power. It's about getting hot at the right time. And it's about a little bit of luck. And I think that this Ole Miss team, while they may not necessarily have star power, they're hot right now. They are on fire. You don't just dismantle Iowa State like that. And yes, I know they were injured, but you don't just do that.
Sure.
And something that I think people may kind of forget about is that, yeah, this is a Michigan State team with a Hall of Fame coach in Tom Izzo. Hey, Chris Beard is on the other side coaching this game,
yeah.
And this is a very, very legitimate Ole Miss squad that ran the gauntlet in the SEC and has the same record as Kentucky does right now. And I think a lot of people view that Kentucky team maybe in a little bit better light than this Ole Miss team, but the reality is, hey, this Ole Miss team dropped 98 points on that Kentucky team's head, and this Ole Miss team is extremely balanced on both ends of the floor. They don't turn the ball over. They're experienced. They're not the tallest team in the world, but they've got playmakers, and this is a really good coach leading the way. So I understand why this line is so short. Does Ole Miss find a way to win this game? I don't know. Right now, this is the toughest one for me. I'm sure it's probably the toughest one tonight for a lot of people, just because I want to take Ole Miss, but because of the name brand, because of the players, because of the coach on the other side, it's really hard for me to not go with Tom Izzo. This is a tough one.
It is. And my thing, though, as great as Tom Izzo has been and is and will be a Hall of Famer, he has fallen short several times with really good Michigan State teams,
yeah,
with better Michigan State teams than this one, who is really good and has seemingly just kind of flown under the radar as the regular season Big Ten champions. Nobody's talking about Michigan State. Nobody's hyping up Michigan State. Most people can't even tell you the starting five on Michigan State, but yet they're a two seed. And they're a slight favorite against Ole Miss tonight. My big concern is the fact that Michigan State legitimately, and Daryl Dappertz was talking about this the other day when he joined us on Wednesday for Double D Wednesdays, every Wednesday from 3:15 to 3:45.
Great name. And,
well, I stole that from Ben Taylor. I can't take credit because Daryl is on Ben's show on Mondays on Albert Opelika this morning for Double D Mondays. And so we just took that and made it Double D Wednesdays. And
incredible.
So Michigan State legitimately plays 7, 8, 9 guys. They have how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They have 6 guys that average over 20 minutes a game, and they have 2 guys who average almost 17 minutes per game. They have more depth than Ole Miss does. The Rebels are going to play 6, maybe 7. Michigan State will play 7, maybe 8, possibly 9. And those bodies mean something at this point in the season, at this point in the tournament. And the size, I think, is a major factor for this Ole Miss team, too. What keeps them around, though, as you said it, they don't turn the ball over. They don't beat themselves, which is why they have made it as far as they have. I don't know. I think Ole Miss can. I just don't think they do.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to pick Michigan State to get Ole Miss tonight. I'll ask you this. It's been the burning question for so many Auburn fans before we get to break, and then we'll talk Kentucky-Tennessee on the other side. If Auburn wins tonight against Michigan, and we'll talk about that game later on in the hour, who would you rather see? Who would Auburn rather see? Is it Ole Miss or Michigan State, in your opinion, and why?
I think that because of the way that you have proven yourself against Ole Miss twice this season, once in a neutral site that was incredibly tough, and at home in the greatest offensive showing in my lifetime, I would rather see the Rebels. I would rather see an opponent that I know how I can compete against them. And look, I had a bad game against them on a neutral site, and I still found a way to win. So if I'm coming in playing well, which I think Auburn completely as a team right now is after getting past Creighton, yeah, give me the Rebels. I do not want to see Tom Izzo. No, thank you.
Yeah, I think that's where I've gotten them at, too. I mean, yes, the storylines are big, but once you get past the storyline of Ole Miss, Auburn has proven that they are a much better team than Ole Miss. So we'll talk Kentucky and Tennessee when we come back, which what could be one of the most exciting games in the NCAA tournament, and then we're breaking it down, Auburn and Michigan, as Lance Dahl is with us here in hour number two here on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
And we're back here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And now we talk what is going to be one of the, I hope, best games of the NCAA tournament. Lance Dahl of Locked On Kentucky in the barn joining us covering Kentucky and Auburn, but we're going to appeal to his Kentucky side here for the next couple of minutes as the third seed Kentucky Wildcats and the two-seeded Tennessee Volunteers. Lance, I told you, I told Christian, I told everybody on this radio show, when the brackets came out on Selection Sunday, this was the matchup that I had sharpied in. I would have put my life that these two teams were going to meet up in the Sweet 16. And here we are. It's an SEC battle. It's the Cats and the Vols in Indianapolis.
I'm scared, man. If you had seen me, if you had seen me sitting there watching that Illinois game, I thought I was about to, I thought that was the end for me. Like, just like at halftime, I was like, we're up, we're playing so well. And then I was expecting the Calipari Arkansas meltdown to ensue, and it didn't. Kentucky held on, and yeah, they just looked like the better team.
I told you last Friday I was confident in Kentucky to beat Illinois.
That's what I told everyone in the room. I was like, our Locked On Hoosiers host, so like what a guy at ESPN 106.7 that I was on the, like, literally on air with, like, 48 hours ago, he was the only person I've talked to that was confident in us winning this game. And I just didn't see it coming. I did not see it coming at all.
I just think Kentucky offensively, they're in a flow. And now, can you give us an update on just the health status of this Kentucky team going into Tennessee tonight?
As far as I can tell, there's been no reporting as far as any health concerns heading into this one.
Okay.
At this point, they may be, and my assumption is that if there is anything even slightly wrong, they're keeping it under wraps. We know that Butler is not healthy. We know that Amari Williams isn't 100%. But I don't think they're going to say anything at this point. Yeah. I think they're just going to let it ride and try and get these kids as healthy, whatever you need to give them, whatever treatment, whatever you got to do to make sure that they're out there playing for at least one more game. As of right now, there's not been anything major that has indicated like anybody's going to be out or anybody's going to be missing time in this game. As far as I can tell, everybody's going to be out there ready to go.
Tennessee favored by 4.5 tonight against Kentucky, and there's revenge in the eyes of the Vols because Kentucky has played Tennessee twice this season, and they've beaten them both times. In Knoxville, 78-73, and then in Lexington, 75-64. Lower scoring than I would think because of how good Kentucky is offensively. Of course, we know how good Tennessee is defensively. It's what they hang their hat on. But this Tennessee team is offensively good when they want to be, when Chaz Lanier gets going, when guys like I just drew a blank on
Ziegler.
Ziegler. There we go. Zakai Ziegler, the point guard for Tennessee. I mean, when those guys start getting going, they can score in a hurry. They just have cold streaks, too. Any concern with the reverse storyline here, the fact that Tennessee's 0-2 but gets a shot in the only game that truly matters against Kentucky?
I'll give you two things here. Before I talk about, you know, the reverse and hot and cold.
Sure.
I don't think we're making enough of a deal. Like, we're not making a big enough deal about what's about to happen tonight. This is one of the biggest rivalries in all of college basketball, and both these teams are talking trash.
Are they really?
Do you see the photo come out of Ziegler? I don't know if I can say this on air, making a gesture towards a Kentucky logo
finger, I would assume.
Yes, and his multiple teammates had comments about it when Kentucky was asked about it. They had comments about it. Amari Williams was like, you know, it's really cute to do stuff like that when you haven't beaten us. And what is it, like 2 years or something like that? It was like, okay. I mean, keep in mind, this is a kid from Drexel that is originally from England, and he is fired up about this one. It's like, that's cute. When's the last time you beat us? Last time I checked, it was a while ago.
That's incredible.
And so these guys are, there is a statement to be made tonight. I keep forgetting it's tonight. It scares me so bad that it's in a few hours.
Lance is so stressed.
Dude, I'm like already. Anyway, this is, there's a lot emotionally at stake in this one. And it all kind of started with Lamont Butler saying earlier this week that Kentucky is going to win the game. It wasn't like, if you go look at the full context quote, absolutely nothing wrong with it. But the piece that got out that Tennessee players reacted to was Butler saying, we're going to go out there and win the game, which it's just like, it's so tame. But apparently that's like, it's Kirby Smart fodder of like, if you say anything against us, we're going to take it and run with it and freak out. But it's the emotions are high. And then the second thing here, you talk about Chaz Lanier and how important he is to this Tennessee offense. In both games against Kentucky, he played horribly. He was 0 of 7 from 3 in one of those games, 3 of 6 inside the arc. And then the second game, he was 2 of 4 from inside, 3 of 10 outside. I mean, he got points eventually, right? He got 15 points in that second matchup, but it was on crazy inefficiency and a lot of volume. So I think for this Kentucky team, you have to find a way to hold Ziegler and Lanier, try and make Ziegler into more of a scorer than a playmaker, make Lanier into more of a forced shot taker, or maybe somebody that tries to put the ball on the deck maybe a little bit more, which is going to be a challenge, again, because this Tennessee team, they have great pieces. This is a really, really good team. I'm not taking anything for granted in this game. This Tennessee team could absolutely whip Kentucky by 30 tonight, but based on what we've seen, it's a good matchup for the Cats. We'll see how it goes.
I was going to ask about Lanier if you put his poor performances more in the credit to Kentucky's defense, or maybe he just had two bad games. But if he shot 7 and 10 times from behind the arc, I mean, he clearly – and I watched those games. I mean, clearly he got shots up. They just weren't falling. Now, Kentucky, I think, did a good job contesting those, but – maybe there is some concern with Kentucky fans that this is the only game, because that's the thing. This is the only game against Kentucky that he has to play well. It's the last opportunity, yes, but the other two games don't matter. 2-0 is worthless right now to Kentucky. 3-0 is worthless to Auburn if they see Ole Miss in the Elite Eight. This is the only game that matters. Does Kentucky win against Tennessee tonight, Lance? They're 4.5-point dogs in Indy.
I think they do. I think they found a way to do it.
Picking the Cats.
Again, to go back to the atmosphere, to go back to the shooting, does Lanier all of a sudden wake up and go insane after shooting 3 of 17 in the first two games? We'll see. I don't see it happening, but we'll see. Give me the Cats.
I want to pick Kentucky so bad because I think they have the offensive firepower to do it, and I've been on them for the first two games. My gut tells me Tennessee finds a way to get it done. So against my will, I'll pick Tennessee to win this game.
I'll be bowling in the ad break here.
We're going to talk about Auburn and Michigan. We hope it's a good game tonight. Some fans may hope it's a blowout. We'll talk about that game. Break it all down when we come back 30 more minutes here on a Friday afternoon.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. We're happy to have Lance Dahl in the studio of Locked On Kentucky and the Barn. He covers Auburn for them over there. Christian Griffin over at Lee Scott. He is going to be on the air in about 15, 20 minutes to call some Lee Scott baseball. So check that out on Tiger Country 104.5. And Lance, we've made the people wait long enough. A full breakdown. Here we go. Of Auburn and Michigan. It is the Tigers and the Wolverines. The storylines are all over the place. People know them all by now, so we won't really harp on those a whole lot.
Sure.
If this game goes the way that we think it can, this should be an incredible basketball game. This should be a really fun 40 minutes. And for those that are going to be watching this game who are not wearing orange and blue or maize and gold, I hope it is, and I think you're going to see a really good basketball game. It's going to be stressful as crap for Auburn and Michigan fans, though.
Jacob, I've got a take for you.
Uh-oh. Hot take or just a take?
I don't think this is going to be a good game.
Really?
I don't think
You think Michigan's going to wipe the floor with Auburn and win by 30? Lance, that is wild. How dare you say that on this radio show?
I don't think this game is going to be particularly close for a variety of reasons.
Here we go. This is why we bring this guy in. Here we go.
I think that Auburn is going to blow Michigan out of the water.
Wow.
For a few different reasons. First of all, do you know where Auburn's playing tonight? You know where Auburn's playing. Right?
They're playing in Auburn East, yes.
You know how well that arena has treated the Tigers over the last several years, actually. Sometimes against Big Ten competition. Actually, I think mainly against Big
several
Ten competition.
Times. Yeah.
Several times.
Yes.
This is nothing new for Auburn. Wow. When you look at the matchup, you start to realize that this is nothing new, at least in my opinion, for Auburn. You say, oh, well, Auburn's never seen anything like the two-big system that Michigan's going to run. They've not seen a point center. Really? You see the one they blew out in Rupp Arena? You see that offense? It's pretty similar in a variety of ways. The only difference here is that I think Kentucky's got much better guard play than Michigan could offer. I don't think this game's going to be close, Jacob. I think that Auburn, with the way that their guards are playing right now, with the environment, with the momentum, I don't think this game will be close.
That's crazy.
I think this is a blowout.
You're the first person I've heard that says it's going to be Auburn winning, covering, and not even close. Because I think so many Auburn people are getting hung up on Golden and Wolf and Trey Donaldson and the storyline. And look, Michigan's a really good team, folks. They're a really good team. They're Big Ten tournament champs for a reason. They were, what, runner-ups or third in the Big Ten regular season standings? Mm-hmm. They were a team that I talked about here and on other platforms before the season started. They were my team to look out for in the Big Ten. I picked them and Ohio State because those two teams had the most transfers, the best transfers. Ohio State didn't quite work out, but Michigan absolutely did. Here they are in the Sweet 16 with a Final Four coach in Dusty May, who is so good and had big other offers coming in that Michigan extended him halfway through his first year and paid him even more money. Dusty May is a really, really good coach.
He's a good coach. He's not winning this game, I'll tell you that.
But you know who else is a good coach? Bruce Pearl. You know whose staff is good? Bruce Pearl's.
Best staff in the country.
And that's what I'm trusting tonight is the scouts on this Michigan team. Auburn this year, the scouting and the game planning has been different than it's ever been. And that's because we know of the offensive and defensive coordinators on this team. We know that each assistant gets a game, a couple of games out, and they've done the best job this year, better than they've ever done since Bruce has been here.
Yep.
In preparing the guys for the team that they're going up against. So you trust that Auburn is going to have the game plan ready to go. In your mind, Lance, and we can debate this a little bit, what does Auburn need to do if they are to blow out Michigan, cover against Michigan, or just win by a single point? What is it that Auburn has to do tonight to beat the Wolverines?
They have to create turnovers, and they have to speed Michigan's offense up. If you go and look, there's actually, I think, a great example of this Michigan team imploding is actually their final game of the regular season against Michigan State. They went into Sparty, and they got manhandled in the first maybe 7 or 8 minutes of that game, where they were throwing the ball all over the place. They were just chaotic. They were turning the ball over nearly every possession down the floor, because Michigan State was just creating so much chaos, and the crowd was getting into it, and they were kind of working themselves up. I think Auburn, again, in this environment, can absolutely do that defensively. With the way that they played in the second half against Creighton, with the way that they were able to lock in defensively and offensively, with the guard play being so good, with Pettiford being so amazing, with Mazar being so good, I see Michigan struggling here. And again, if it's in the first 8 minutes, if it's throughout the game, I think Auburn will be able to do enough defensively to create enough havoc for Michigan's offense, where they have to then turn to guys like Trey Donaldson, guys like Burnett, and they won't be able to get it done, at least not relative to what Auburn's going to be able to do offensively.
Let's get to the phone lines. 334-321-1390. Ty the Tiger, you got a prediction for tonight? Auburn and Michigan over in Atlanta for the Sweet 16?
Guys, if we lose this game, I'm going to cry. this one's going to hurt. This one's going to hurt. Talent, Auburn. Coaching, Auburn. Defense, Auburn. Offense, Auburn. And point spread, Vegas, Auburn. And somehow or another, it's just going to be a close game. It's just how the way Auburn is. And if it's not a close game at the final buzzer, it'll almost kind of like Creighton was. You know, it was still like 5 minutes left. It was still like six or seven. Still reachable. What scares me tonight, man, is you got KT Harold's on the Michigan staff. You got Trey Donaldson over there. You got Wolf, who went up and down the floor on his last year at Yale. They can do it. They can do it. I mean, they're hot. They won the Big Ten. But if we play our game, I don't think nobody can beat us.
Yep.
I really don't. I don't think nobody can beat us. If we play our game, if we play our A game, we can beat anybody in the country. We're deeper than anybody in the country, in my opinion, not just looking through orange and blue glasses. But our 1 to 10 is better than anybody else's. Their starting five might be better, but our depth and when our starters come off the floor, our second string, Pettiford might be, the third or fourth best freshman in the country. overall, and he's coming off the bench and getting dropping 23 on.
Sure. And that's where Auburn has to be. You're right. That's where Auburn has to get production, is from Tahad Pettiford, who's proven this is his wheelhouse, man. Big time games on the biggest stage when the entire country's watching. This is where Tahad Pettiford steps up and becomes a grown man. You know what I say, Ty? I love Tahad Pettiford. And then you've got Chaney Johnson, who we've all talked about it. Everybody knows if Chaney Johnson steps up and has double-digit points and 8 rebounds.
It's a problem.
12 points, 8 rebounds from Chaney Johnson from here on out in every game wins Auburn a national championship, Ty. That's how important he is off the bench. It has to start tonight with Michigan.
Tonight, if the front court can be a wash, if we can hang with them in points in the paint, if we can hang with them in rebounds and especially offensive rebounds. I watched that Big Ten championship with Wisconsin, and that's when they came back and won that game. They just kept getting offensive rebound and second chance points. And, you know, Trey is Trey, but he's going to hit a big shot, man. I mean, he's still a player. We didn't recruit him because he sucked. We recruited him because he was a dang good kid, and he still is. You know,
well, a lot of
people forget that, man.
Trey Donaldson's, you know, a dog, man. I love Trey Donaldson. He's a player, man.
I mean, he is. He might have a bad game or two, and he might go 0-for-5 from the 3-point line, and then with 2 minutes left, hit 2 in a row.
Sure,
and that's just who Trey is.
Yep.
And I get it. And I look, if we can have the big wash, if we can be 50-50 on points in the paint, rebounds, and offensive rebounds, I think Denver Jones, Pettiford, and Baker Mazar win us the game.
Yep,
I don't think they have anybody in their backcourt that can hang, that can overpower Denver Jones as far as defense and get past him. I don't think they have anybody that can score like Pettiford, and I don't think they have an X factor like Chad Baker.
He has a game, and
I think that's going to be and like you said, Chaney Johnson for the rest of the tournament. Let me tell you, man, if you know bigs get you to the tournament, but guard play, I mean, that's what really wins you these games, man.
Having
somebody
that
can hit a three late in the game and just having a big shot, man.
No doubt.
Look, the reason why I'm gonna cry is not because Auburn loses. I'm so upset they lost. I've seen a bunch of losses in some big time games. I've got tickets to Sunday. If I don't get to scan those QR codes walking into that State Farm Arena, guys, I'm gonna cry because I'm ready. I've got my Call God shirt already. I went and bought it at Dick Academy.
That's awesome.
Now,
that's awesome.
$35. I'm ready, guys. I'm ready, man.
We're rooting for Auburn for you. Appreciate it, Ty. Always great to hear from you, brother. 334-321-1390. How many people are in that boat where they're like, man, I paid a lot of money for these tickets on Sunday?
Absolutely.
And they want to be there. Look, I'll speak to this. I've told this story before, but there is nothing cooler than watching your team clinch a spot in the Final Four. I was in Kansas City. When Auburn beat Kentucky in overtime to go to the Final Four, it was incredible. It was true. I was a freshman in college, got off a cruise from spring break with my family on Friday night, drove back to Birmingham. We got up on Saturday because all the guys on the trip made a pact, and we said, because we watched Auburn beat North Carolina on the cruise in the Sweet 16, and we said, if Auburn wins that game, we're going to Kansas City. We're going to the Elite Eight. We get off the cruise Friday night. We get back to Birmingham. We get up. We leave at noon. We drive 13 hours straight from Birmingham, Alabama to Kansas City. Get up. Watch the game on Sunday afternoon. Watch Auburn clinch a Final Four, beating Kentucky. Got in the car at around 6 in the evening. Drove straight back to Birmingham and went to class and work that next morning.
Wow.
8 a.m. Didn't even sleep. It was
one
of the coolest things we've ever done. The drive was terrible. It was horrific. But watching your team clinch a Final Four spot, it was unbelievable. And I want fans to have that opportunity again.
Yeah. That was a great call, by the way. But it was funny for me. You know, I hope there are no Kentucky fans listening to this, but I was watching the game with my family, and with about probably 12 minutes left, my sister and I got in the car, and we were in Dadeville. We drove, flying up 280 to try and go to Toomer's to get there on time.
In 2019,
yeah. And I remember we parked, and the game ended right as we got out. And I remember sprinting. It was like we had parked, behind J&M. I remember sprinting down that alleyway.
That's awesome.
And I was by myself.
Yeah.
My sister was still, trying to get out of the car. And I was, by myself. There was nobody around me whenever I broke out into the street. And I look, and there are hundreds of people flooding to meet at Toomer's. It was such a cool experience. And, yeah, I want people to be able to have that, absolutely. And I think Ty made a really good point about this this Michigan team, that it's a good team. There's a reason they've got here. There's a reason they won the Big Ten. But you look at the guys, from the three up. Burnett, who has been efficient statistically so far this season, has been really cold as of late. I mean, he didn't score any points against A&M. I think he scored 6 in their previous contest. He's not been somebody that's given them a ton of production. Gale has not been an efficient shooter so far this season. You look at a guy like Reuben Jones has been a starter at various points. He's not been efficient. They just don't have a ton of guys in that backcourt that, yes, some of them are taller, yes, some of them are really athletic, but they rely on their bigs to kind of make this stuff go, and they're super efficient at the rim. But if Auburn's clicking defensively and they're creating those turnovers and they're kind of preventing them from getting inside, which, again, I see happening, what's stopping at least one Auburn Tiger, 1 through 3, from going off and kind of making that the matchup, making that the game? Is it Jones? Is it Pettiford? Is it Mazzara? Is it somebody maybe like you said, like Chaney Johnson down low, maybe even? Mm-hmm. So I just think that this Auburn team, we've seen them play. We've seen their A game. We've seen them beat teams better than this. We've seen them play better than teams like this. And on paper, I like the matchup. I do not see this game being close. I know that KenPom has Auburn winning this game by, 8 points? I think it's going to be more than that. I think you're looking at a 15 to 20 point win, if not more. Because of, again, the location, the momentum, the matchup on paper. I just really like the way that Auburn's heading into this one. Give me the Tigers.
Wow. Auburn favored by 8.5 points. I think if they play up to their standard, up to their capability, Auburn should win. Mm-hmm. Auburn should cover. Auburn should pull away from this thing. I just think Michigan's going to give them everything they've got, but I will pick Auburn to win this game. I think Auburn's the better team. I do. For everything you said, Ty said, as everybody else has said, I think Auburn's the better team, and I'm going to pick them to beat Michigan tonight. But when we come back, there are more games this weekend, some that we know of and some that we don't. We'll make our final four predictions and wrap it up here on the Free for All Friday edition of On the Line. All that when we come back.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Winding down here on the Friday edition of On the Line as we... Are you fired up?
Yeah,
is that
man.
What you're saying?
Yeah,
fired
man. I'm not up. Winding down. I'm turning up, Jacob. We got a game here in a couple hours.
We do. We got several games coming up in just a few hours. Everything gets started right around 6 o'clock, and we just made our picks. We both have Auburn winning. Lance has Auburn winning by a million. I have Auburn winning by a few. But the next time that I step in this studio, it will be a Monday afternoon, and the Final Four will be set. We have Sweet 16 tonight and then Elite 8 on Saturday and Sunday. And so, Lance, given what we know right now, which is half of the Elite 8, the other half will be set tonight, when this show goes on the air, 2 o'clock on Monday afternoon, who will be in the Final Four?
First of all, thoughts and prayers to Texas Tech for what's about to happen to them.
I agree with that.
Weekend.
I agree with that.
You talk about Auburn and their blowouts. I don't necessarily know if Florida's going to blow them out, because that Texas Tech team has a ton of grit. They've got some good players, man. Toppin's great.
Toppin's
Williams
awesome.
Is great. That's a good team, but Florida is just on another level. Thoughts and prayers to them as they take on the Gators. And then also, that Bama Duke, that may be one for the ages. We may see an all-time college basketball game here over the weekend with Duke and Alabama. How could you not? The line we were saying over the break is 6.5. how is it not closer?
Yeah. How could you not flirt with Bama and sprinkle a little something on that for entertainment purposes only? Why would you not take the Alabama's team that just broke the NCAA tournament game record for three-pointers made? Yes, the idea is that they won't do it again, and I don't think they'll do it to that extent, but why not take
that team? But they're not going to go cold. Well, I say that. I'm secretly trying to jinx them.
ain't no way.
Ain't no way they're going to shoot like that,
no,
Paul.
They're not going to do it, Paul. They can't do it.
It's Mark Sears. Can't hit the brats out of a barn, Paul. You done jinxed them. No, I really do think that this Alabama team, look, it's all, again, like I'm saying, it's all about playing hot, dude. It's all about catching fire. And this Bama team's caught that right now.
Yeah.
Is it still in the bottle or did they let it out? We'll see against Duke. But, man, that should be a phenomenal matchup. I'm so intrigued to see what Malawach and Flagg do against Bama's front court. Because the thing that Bama has done all season long is they have improved compared to last season. They've been great at preventing the three, but at times they've been spotty at the rim. And so do you see Duke try and attack inside? But we were talking about over the break. Do you see both these teams try and get to the line here? Do we see a foul fest? Do we see Twitter go up in arms over what's happening with the officiating in this game? Who knows? But all I can say is that it should be a barn burner. Absolutely.
I'll make my prediction. I think for the games that are set tomorrow, I think Florida waxes Texas Tech. I think they're so much better. It'll be close at halftime. Florida will play. It will look very similar to the Maryland game last night. Florida will let them hang around, and then they'll pull away. With what I saw from Duke against Arizona, their defense was not good, but Alabama's is worse. I'm going to take Duke to beat Alabama in the Elite Eight. That would put 2-1 seeds into my Final Four. With my games that I picked tonight, I have Auburn beating Michigan. I said Michigan State will beat Ole Miss. I have Tennessee beating Kentucky, and I have Houston beating Purdue. I then have Auburn beating Michigan State, and I have Houston beating Tennessee. I will have all 4-1 seeds in my Final Four, which goes against my bracket that I picked on this show with Auburn and Alabama playing in the national title game. But I just think with how teams are playing, I'll take all 4-1 seeds to make it to San Antonio.
I think this is a very fair spot to be in. I think I'm right there with you.
There you go. Hey, plug your stuff. Lance Dahl, Locked On Kentucky in the Barn.
Locked On Kentucky, wherever you get your podcast, or on YouTube at thebarnauburn.com as well. Breaking down stuff over there. Thanks, Jacob.
Yeah, appreciate you stopping by, coming in replacement for Christian Griffin, who is about to be on the air over on Tiger Country 104.5 for Lee Scott Baseball. The drive's coming up for about 35 minutes, and then Auburn Baseball with Brad Law here on ESPN taking on Georgia. All that and more. We'll see you on Monday talking about a Final Four. Until then, stay safe. I'll talk to you later.